pastime sessions connected with this very simple little book that I found in the temple shop just before coming out here called The Light of the Bhagavad, which when I picked it up, I didn't think that it would be as suitable for interrelating with the pastimes of Vrindavan as it is. As I said before, this is not the same as the section of Srila Prabhupada's purports in the Krishna book, but this is something he wrote specifically whilst in Vrindavan. So as you read through his metaphors and his descriptions, you see that he regularly refers back to the pastimes of Vrindavan in a very simple way. And this was something that he had himself wanted to present to the world outside of Vrindavan, to the people who knew nothing of Vrindavan. He wanted to share with them by using natural metaphors something of the glories of that transcendental abode. So Krishna is very soothing, both for us and for the residents of Vrindavan who are always yearning for his association. So the Prabhupada tells us, in the autumn, there is a gulf of difference between the day and the night. During the day, the extreme heat of the sun is unbearable. But at night, the moonlight is extremely soothing and refreshing. Similarly, Lord Sri Krishna is soothing both for the gopis and for the mundane man in illusion who accepts the body as the soul. So here is a little bridge for us, because when we're hearing about the residents of Vrindavan, it can feel very easily as if we're speaking of some living beings on another dimension that we can only barely comprehend the nature of their sentiments and their motivation. Whereas it's very easy for us, and therefore we preach on a level of trying to smash the illusions of the modern man. And we can relate very quickly to this mood because we also share them. So Prabhupada says, as long as the living being under illusion accepts the body or the mind as the soul, he will always be unhappy, just like the man who is burning in the heat of autumn. He will always be unhappy. Here's a statement that should penetrate. We should carve it on the inside of our mind. Just like sometimes when a young boy likes a young girl, they carve on a tree a big heart with some initials. So whenever they go by, their heart palpitates seeing that. So we should carve this in our consciousness. As long as I am under the illusion of accepting my body and mind as my soul, I will always be unhappy. So when I'm unhappy because of this or unhappy because of that, one should become wise and understand I will always be unhappy because of the misconception. Just like a man in the burning, burning heat. But when the same living being becomes a devotee of Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, when he becomes a devotee, so we're becoming devotees, but we're still devotees who have this misconception. But as soon as a man becomes a devotee of Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, he at once lives a soothing life, as if under the cooling rays of the moon in autumn. So we can translate that for our own minds. And as much as I am becoming a devotee of Lord Krishna, then to that much I will be able to live this soothing life under the cooling rays of the moon in autumn. So Prabhupada goes on to speak about how also in the nature of the love of the gopis for Vrindavan, these eternal consorts of the Lord terribly suffered the separation of Krishna when the Lord was absent from their presence for his engagement in tending the cows in the forest. So they did not suffer when he was millions of miles away, but they suffered when he was an eye blink away. How many times while we're listening, we're blinking our eyes and we're totally unconscious. Every now and again we can recognize, oh, I'm blinking my eyes. But we don't even notice. It doesn't interfere in any way with our life. But for them, a blink of the eye of not seeing Krishna felt like it had been millions of years since they last saw him. Imagine how intense their loving sentiments were to feel like that. Imagine how much you would value something to feel like a blink of the eye was an innumerable time length of separation from that person or object. So the Lord so much appreciated this natural feelings of the gopis that he declared his inability to repay their intense love. The conclusion is that the regular practice of bhakti yoga will lead the devotee to the plane of intense love for Krishna. The regular practice of bhakti yoga. And that is the single qualification by which the conditioned soul is allowed to re-enter the eternal life of bliss in the kingdom of God. So now, in Vrindavan, life begins very, very early in the morning when everybody wakes up, just as here in this world. But there, everybody rises to action for the pleasure of Krishna. Everybody has a loving, active relationship with him. The cows wake up and they begin to moo. And they're calling not for their calves, but they're calling for Krishna. And when Krishna comes, only when they see Krishna will the calves drink the milk of their mothers. And then the men can milk the cows, and then the cow's milk can be given to Krishna. And the men wake up early in the morning and they go to milk the cows. And they're at the barn, they're also waiting. When will Krishna come? Krishna should come and be with us. And the boys wake up and they prepare to play and have breakfast with Krishna and go out to the forest. And then on the other side, in Javat, Srimati Radharani wakes up. And all of her friends wake up. And her grandmother, who's a little partially blind, her name is Mukhara. And sometimes she's also called Jarati. And Mukhara comes every morning to wake up Srimati Radharani, and she cries and cries and cries, and she puts her, even though she's so big, she puts her on her lap and she hugs her and she cries and she says so many wonderful things to her. And she sometimes notices that she's wearing a garment that looks extraordinarily like the chada of the son of Nanda Maharaj. She thinks this is a bit suspicious, and so she makes a little comment. Sometimes she overlooks it. Sometimes she speaks quite openly and says, "What is this? This yellow cloth? What is this yellow cloth?" And Vishakhadevi is very fast. So she quickly as anything, she says, "Oh, my dear half-blind grandmother, don't worry, it's your eyes. You see, you don't see very clearly. You see the sun coming in the window," and she looks at the sun and she says, "You see the sun is shining on the cloth," and very quickly they swap cloths, and they say, "You see the sun is shining on the cloth and the light from the sun, it's looking like yellow, but actually, you see, look closely." "Oh, yes. Oh, I understand. So then off goes Mukhara, and she goes off to Nandagram to wake up Krishna, because she is also Krishna's nurse when he was a baby. So she goes to see him also, because the residents of Braj love Radha and Krishna more than their own lives millions of times. So off she goes, and everybody wakes up. But what do we do here when we get up in the morning? Of course, we're devotees, so we have a simpler lifestyle. But most people get up and they have a bath and they eat something quickly, and the husband gets ready to go to work to do a day of Ugra Karma, and the children have to go to school, and sometimes if they like learning what they're learning, then they're unfortunate. And if they don't like learning what they're learning, they're also unfortunate. And they have to be packed off to school with a quick lunch or breakfast with them. And then the mother, nowadays she also goes to work. So she's off in the car, two cars, one going this way, one going that way. And we heard last night how Lord Chaitanya was feeling no ecstasy in his heart by talking with one materialistic person, a conversation of 2 minutes. Just imagine, we all know this, if we have to work for our living, and you come home at night and there is a drained feeling. There is no ecstasy in the heart of a materialist. So what do? They find a compatible form of entertainment and they plug in to some technological device and let that device take over their minds and consciousness, and off they go in some form or another, like dead people. But the gopis, the devotees of Krishna, they're not like that, the residents of Vrindavan. They don't have to work in that way. Srila Prabhupada says, we should not be disappointed in our muddy life of material existence. In our muddy life of material existence. For as soon as we voluntarily take to the devotional service of the Lord, our whole life becomes clear, like water in the autumn. Devoid of our relationship with God, our life is barren. But as soon as the muddy mind is cleared by spiritual association or cultivation of the human spirit, the threefold miseries of material life are at once cleared off. So I can say for myself, and I think for all of us here, that we haven't experienced that yet, that the threefold miseries are cleared off and our muddy life has become transparent. But certainly when I look and see the lives of materialistic people, I can understand that huge leaps have been taken by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada to allow us to come to the position that we are now in. Prabhupada says, thus the lotus of knowledge gradually fructifies, and this gradual process of development ushers in transcendental bliss. So if we are not feeling transcendentally blissful right now, we should continue with our process, because this process brings us to that point. So then, the day begins and Krishna and his friends go out to play, and we can hear a little of their activities so that we can have a little bit of a meditation. It's so important, even though we're not up to the point where we can do any kind of deep meditation on Vrindavan, the more details that we hear, the more successful we will be at remembering Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada tells us what the servants of Krishna do. They collect flowers. They decorate his body with valuable ornaments and trinkets. They dance before him. And they sing. The servants of Krishna even help him herd the cows. Or they massage his body. They prepare flower garlands and they fan him. These are some of the primary duties of the servants of Krishna. So if we would like to do these things are done by the servants of Krishna. Now the friends of Krishna, they have a little more intimacy than the servants, although in Vrindavan everyone is intimate with Krishna. So what do the friends do? All the friends were very daring, and they would risk any difficulty because they were confident that Krishna would help them to be victorious in every adventure. So they were very playful and bold. They used to sit together and advise one another what to do, sometimes inducing another to be engaged in some sort of welfare work, and sometimes offering betel nuts to one another, or decorating one another's face with tilak, or smearing chandan on one another's bodies. So their contact with Krishna is more intimate. The servants, they can dress Krishna, but they quickly dress him for his pleasure. But the cowherd boys, they play with Krishna's body as if it's their own body. We know how we all have an intimate relationship with our own body. It's just natural. We touch, we feel, we look in the mirror, we do so many things with our own body. So they have that connectedness with Krishna's body. Sometimes for the sake of amusement, they used to decorate their faces in strange ways. So that would be interesting to see. We see sometimes people do that in America, right? On Halloween, they decorate their faces in strange ways. So all the things of this world, when we understand this, Krishna consciousness becomes very deep and natural. When you understand, it dawns on one that every single thing that we see here that we're attracted to exists in perfection there. Everything. It's full there. It's much more full than here. This is like a shadow compared to there. So our interest should be taken from here and placed in that direction. And then we can experience reality. So what else did they do? Some of the friends wanted to defeat Krishna. Sometimes they used to snatch his clothing, or they would snatch away flowers from his hand. So just imagine, we're learning the process of deity worship, to everything in the proper way, at the proper time, as we were hearing last night with the mantras and so on and so forth. But Lord Chaitanya crushed all the rules to powder. So similarly here we see completely contradictory activities, that were we to imitate them, we would make such blunders. If we were to do our deity worship and snatch the flowers away from Krishna, want to push him over and do so many things, we would be severely criticized. But they have pure love, so they can act in any way for Krishna's pleasure. Sometimes one would try to induce another to decorate his body for him, and failing this, they were always ready to fight. So they were always fighting, challenging one another to combat in wrestling. These are some of the general activities of Krishna and his friends. So now, the activities... Oh, there's a little bit, a small insert here. What Krishna was doing in his Kishore age. At this age, Krishna took pleasure in whispering into the ears of his friends. And the subject of his talks was... Does anyone know what the subject of his talks happened to be? Yes. The subject of his talks was the beauty of the gopis, who were just happening to be tarrying before him. Subhao once addressed Krishna and said, "My dear Krishna, you are very cunning." Now note that. Here you are hearing how the boys are always fighting and how Krishna is very cunning. Keep these words in your mind. "You are very cunning. You can understand the thoughts of others. Therefore, I am whispering within your ear that all of these five gopis, who are most beautiful, have all been attracted by your dress. And I believe that Cupid has entrusted them with the responsibility of conquering you." So this was their playful talks. In other words, the beauty of the gopis was capable of conquering Krishna, although Krishna is the conqueror of the universe. So remember that also. Now, sometimes Krishna would go playing in the forest with the gopis, especially in the middle of the day. They would make some kind of arrangement to leave. And Jyotila Devi, who was always keeping a watchful eye on her daughter-in-law with great concern for her chastity, because she considered that the son of Nanda Maharaj was a debauchee and he was a ruiner of the housewives of Vrindavan's chastity, because he would look at them in such a way and they would tarry, as we heard here, before them, even though they were young married girls, and this was not at all acceptable. But she had great faith in her daughter-in-law that she would not fall to this platform, that the other girls of Raja seemed to easily become involved in. So she was always keeping a watchful eye over her daughter-in-law. And this was very difficult and painful. But she had one thing that she liked done regularly, and that was the puja to Surya Dev. Because one time she had been told that this puja to Surya Dev was keeping her son, Radharani's husband, Abhimanyu, alive. That if it wasn't for having such a chaste wife who did this wonderful puja, Abhimanyu would have died already, and all the cows would have been lost from their family, and all sorts of misfortunes would have befallen them. So she was very, very concerned that Radharani daily did her puja to Suryadev at Suryakund. So every morning she would come and she would suggest that now is the time for the benefit of your whole family, and this is a great austerity that you have to perform so that our prosperity goes on and your husband's life is a very chaste activity. You should go now in the morning with your friends to Suryakund. And Srimati Radharani would be very happy to do this puja. And of course we know that this was an arrangement for her to leave Javat. and to leave the company of Jyotila Devi and Kutila. Kutila was even worse. Kutila was her sister-in-law, and Kutila was very suspicious. She would many times go out spying, because she was quite convinced that Srimati Radharani was not acting in the appropriate way. So she would go out. Sometimes she would get a message from a parrot, and the parrot would say, "You know, I just saw the son of Nanda Maharaj by the bank of the Jamuna." And then Kutila would be sitting, always thinking, and she would remember that Srimati Radharani, my sister-in-law told me she was going to do some puja at the Jamuna. So she put two and two together, and she would start off immediately from Javad. And of course the parrots on the other side were giving warning, Kutila is coming. And everything would be immediately put in such a way. So this is Krishna's perfect arrangement. This is not like the adulterous behavior of the mundane world. If you see a tree and it's standing on the bank of a reservoir of water, the top part of the tree will be the lowest part in the water. So the lowest, most abominable activities when performed in the world of men are the topmost transcendental activities when they're performed in the realm, the transcendental realm, where there is no need of morality, because there's not the slightest trace of impurity in the hearts of any of these personalities. And in fact, they are all Krishna's own personal energies. It is like a boy playing with his own hands. Krishna is playing with his own parts and parcels. So when we forget and think Krishna is an ordinary person, we think, oh, these pastimes sound a little suspicious. But actually this is not so. So Radha and Krishna, they meet, and they're wandering through the forests. And Vrindadevi has different forests. There's 10 forests. There's one forest that has every season manifest at the same time. So if they want to be in summer forest, they can go to the summer forest. If they want to go to the winter forest, there's two winters. There's the dewy season, like we'll see soon, the mists will come and the fog will come. There is a dewy cold season, and there's a very cold season. So then there's autumn, monsoon, and spring. So each one of these forests has all the characteristics of this particular season. Then there's three forests that mix two together. And there's one forest that has all the seasons at the same time. And this is all done for Krishna's pleasure. Everyone in Vrindavan is trying to make a beautiful, to the fullest extent, a beautiful arrangement for Krishna's pleasure. So whilst Radha and Krishna are wandering in the autumn forest, they look up in a tree, and there are two parrots, and they're having a very amusing conversation. Actually, a very foolish conversation. But this perhaps is for the entertainment of Radha and Krishna. So just like we see in this world, men and women often quarrel with each other. And particularly in Kali Yuga, the women want women's rights, and the men want what they want, and women want to earn more money, and they want a better position, they want security, and the men, and they're manipulating each other backwards and forwards, and there's so much strife between men and women. So here we will hear how there's a lot of strife going on, an argument between the male and the female parrots. So the male parrots, of course, they're very assertive and proud, and they get the first say. So the male parrot says, "We are great students of the Vedas, and we are teachers of Vedanta philosophy." Because the parrots know so much. The parrots are very wise in Vrindavan. They speak so many wise words. Then they look at the female parrots and they say, "You females, you are by nature merely our maidservants." Now, what lady likes to be spoken to like that? In Vrindavan, even the gopis don't like to be spoken like that, because they think that actually Srimati Radharani is superior. They say, "Because Krishna is the king of Vrindavan and he's very pleased with us, he gave us this forest as our property. So we are ordering you, do not touch this tree until we have finished eating these fruits. Now go away." Go somewhere else. And the female parrots reply. Now, note in their conversation how even though they're arguing and squabbling with each other, it's a completely transcendental experience, unlike the selfish, self-centered quarreling between men and women of this world. In the center is always Radha and Krishna, Radha and Krishna. The females say, "You are just rebellious. Who do you think you are to defy the authority of our mistress, Srimati Radharani? She is the queen of Vrindavan, and even the Puranas proclaim this as such. They say, Radhe Vrindavane Vane. She is the ruler of this forest." So they're not moving. The males say, "Oh, you say this, but your evidence is from the Smriti Shastras." You see how hair, you know, splitting they are. "From the Smriti Shastras, but we know from the Shruti Shastras that Vrindavan is the property of Krishna. And the Smriti Shastra is better than the Shruti Shastras. So our quotes are more authoritative." So there, you should consider this. "It is well known in all the worlds, and it delights the minds of all the people that Krishna is the king of the Vrindavan forest." Now, the females reply and say, "Although Radharani is clearly the queen, and therefore her lover, it is her lover who is its king, she is superior, this is not the only relationship that she has with this forest. The forest of Vrindavan is an expansion of Radharani's expansion. It is a reflection of her transcendental body." And not only that, they continue. Now they're going to start getting a little personal. "The cowherd boys, like Krishna, are very handsome and very pleasant to see. Externally, they're very nice. But within their hearts, they are polluted with great cunning." Yeah, did you hear? Subal was telling Krishna, "You're very cunning." So the gopis have picked up on this. "Outside you look very nice, but inside you're very cunning." Huh, the male parrots objected, and they defended Krishna and the cowherd boys by criticizing the gopis. They said, "You gopis are like coconuts." So now they continue their arguments. "You're like coconuts. Why are you like coconuts? Because you have a hard outer shell, and then you are soft and nectarine on the inside, like the coconut pulp. No, you have a hard outer shell, and then you are soft, and then you are nectarine on the inside." So in the way of criticizing each other, of course, they're glorifying each other. They say, "You gopis are covered by a hard shell of pride, and within there is a soft coating of gentleness." Not very much. "But within that, there is a pool of transcendental nectar. But my master Krishna," they say, "he has no faults. He is full of nectar on the inside and the outside. So he is just like a grape." Now, you should understand that parrots really like grapes. And very often when they've said something very nice, they get fed some grapes. Then the females say, "No, no, your master Achyuta is not like a grape. He is like sugarcane stalk." "Why?" "Because nectar exists within him, but he has this hard, rough covering of arrogance. And without removing that hard covering from the outside, no one can taste his sweetness." Now, then they give another pressing example. Because if you think, when you see how they get the sweetness out of sugarcane, they press it. So they refer to another example, and they say, "Oh, and also, he's a little like a sesame seed. Because when you take sesame seeds, if you want to get the oil out of sesame seeds, you have to press them and get the oil out from them, that hard covering. And then, if you can press very hard, you can obtain the oil of gentle love within Krishna." So they're arguing backwards and forwards in the bushes and in the trees, and Radha and Krishna are listening and laughing at this argument. Then the male parrots say, They start comparing the gopis with flowers now, and they say, you gopis are like these Java flowers, they're very pretty and they have no smell. But Krishna's like a blue lotus flower, he looks very beautiful and he smells very nice. And then the female parrots say, no, our Radha is like the red manjista plant, which is red on the outside and red on the inside. And then they say, but your Krishna, he is like a crystal. When you put a crystal next to anything, it reflects the colors of the thing it's put next to. So when he's next to Radharani, he reflects all her qualities. And therefore, that is why she agrees to stay in his company. Male parrots don't like this, and they say, our Krishna is so strong, he lifted Govardhan Hill. Who can compare with that? And the females say, that's because Lord Vishnu invested his power in him. Otherwise, he couldn't have done it. Fools think that he killed all these demons, but he could not do any of it without Lord Vishnu's help. Then the males say, Radha enjoys serving Krishna's feet. So she serves his feet. But Krishna enjoys Radharani's loving, affectionate exchanges. So if you compare the two, you can see that Krishna's enjoyment is on a superior platform. Then, the females, they leave that one alone. And they say, you know, Krishna's flute causes havoc in the forest. It stuns all the streams. Or it enchants everyone. And the birds, they stop in the sky and they fall down from the sky. And all the animals become stunned. Everyone becomes affected. And worst of all, it attracts all the gopis' hearts. Then the males proudly say, who can describe the glories of Krishna's flute? And there's a wonderful quote. They say, by showering the nectar of its music upon the hearts of the women in the universe, this flute washes away the mud of love for any other man and uncovers the heart's natural love for Krishna. This quote is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then this conversation is described as maddened with love for their master and mistress. The male and female parrots continue to delightfully converse. So on and on they converse like this, and this is what goes on in Vrindavan. So now back to us. When arguments happen in this world, it is so much due to competition for sense enjoyment and position and so many different things like that. But here we see that the parrot's arguments have a different quality. Srila Prabhupada will give us one quote. This is not about arguing. This is just a final quote to give us a little hope, because we're hearing so many very transcendental things and we may not feel very transcendental ourselves. Prabhupada says, one should not be discouraged in the discharge of devotional service. Failure may not be detrimental. They may be the pillars of success. One must have good faith in the regulative principles followed by self-realized souls. And one should not be doubtful about the ultimate results of devotional service. So these are our responsibilities, to increase our faith in the value of the regulative principles that we've been given. This is our responsibility. We can't ask this one away like some magic answer. How can I get this? We have to develop this. It's a cultivation. We have to have faith in the importance and the value of the regulative principles. And we have to eradicate the doubt about the ultimate goal. Prabhupada says, we should not consider going back to Godhead a plaything. Sometimes I hear devotees say, oh, anyway, this person went back to Godhead, and oh, this person did this, this, and this, and they went back to Godhead. And some people say they don't believe that we can go back to Godhead, and it becomes very much their reasoning and their conversation becomes very tainted with a Christian overlay of going to heaven. Everyone goes to heaven, or maybe they go to hell. I don't know if they go to heaven. I don't even have liked if I'd go to heaven. It might be boring. That we grew up with, very many of us, in our cultural conditioning. And we should not think in this way about going back to Godhead, as if it's a sort of arbitrary thing. I'd like that. No, I wouldn't like it. Who cares anyway? We shouldn't be so foolish. Prabhupada says, we must take it seriously as enjoined in the scriptures. For the strict follower, the result is sure and certain. And when the time is right, the result will come of its own force. So we should understand this. And we see this in small scale in our endeavors, that we should continue. The result is certain, but we should go on with our devotional activities, and small results come in their own time to encourage us on that path. Prabhupada finishes by saying, the Almighty God awards the results we desire, and therefore we should desire that which is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. So this is why we have all come to Govardhan, to the lap of Govardhan, to sit in the valley of Govardhan, so that we can hear about that place which is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. And then by hearing, we should pray to Giriraj with whatever strength we have, that somehow or other it will make some impression on our hearts, so that we can become serious, no matter on what stage of our learning development we may be, that we can become one of these serious students who is on their path back to the spiritual world. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.